Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. Welcome back. It's the first podcast of the year. Lots of changes everywhere. A new season, a new division, one new player, but some of the same old dramas rearing their head once again. And with Fulhamish, it's all change as well. A new lick of paint on the logo, you might have noticed. A new podcast network, but the same old faces on the Thursday Club. So I am delighted to welcome back the usual crew. Jack Collins, hello.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. It's good to be back, mate. It's good to be back.
Oh, wonderful to be back. And The Athletic UK's Peter Rutzler still with us for another season of fun.
Hey, Sammy. Hey, Jack. Hi, everybody. How are we doing? We good? We happy? Optimistic?
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Well, I mean, look, we've been away from the podcast a little bit longer than we'd have liked. We've had tweets aplenty of get back podcasting. I had one on Sunday, which was particularly funny, which was release a podcast, you cowards. So glad to be behind a microphone once again and hopefully part of your routine between now and May. One podcast a week, at least until the start of the season. And as ever, once the season has started, two podcasts a week. I mentioned about the new network, by the way. So Fulhamish, the podcast, no longer part of The Athletic UK, but we are delighted that Peter can stay on. That was the most important part of it. So Peter, we're delighted to have you again for another season, giving us all your insight into your latest articles. So I'm glad we could get those contract negotiations through. Slightly less protracted than those contract negotiations for Manus Solomon.
Yeah, a little bit less protracted, I think. But no, delighted to still be here and can annoy you two on a Thursday. So that's all good with me.
Absolutely. Great. Well, there's tons to get into today. It's been a dramatic summer. We all thought that when Fulham got promoted automatically, it would just be a summer of bliss with easy transfers and no bickering.
Did you think that? No, I didn't think that.
Well, where do we start? I think probably with the one confirmed transfer, João Palhinha. Jack will probably tell me off for pronouncing that wrong.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of snark for me, but I think it's João Palhinha.
Oh, I wasn't far off. Okay. Confirmed transfer on Monday, Peter. About 20 million euros was the reported fee from Sporting, and a really exciting signing. When the rumours of this one came through, I think a lot of us thought, okay, but that's a long shot. He's a very talented player. But there was a battle with Wolves. It seems that Fulham came out on top. It doesn't seem that Fulham came out on top. Fulham did come out on top in that battle to secure his services. And a midfield enforcer. Not the centre-back that lots of people want, but I think he'll be absolutely crucial to us next season, particularly with the departure of Seri.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think this will be a really key piece in the Fulham jigsaw. Quite clearly a key target for Fulham and for Marco Silva as well. And a player who is probably a little bit different to the majority of Premier League players who've come over to the Premier League. You know, he's far more defensively minded. And we've seen the players that tend to succeed, they tend to be those technical players, don't they, that have done well. That said, you've got Ruben Diaz and João Cancelo. And I'm sure Jack may touch on that a little bit more. But from what I've been hearing and from those I've been speaking to about Palhinha, this is quite clearly almost a bit of a coup, I think, for Fulham, because considering, I know that last season probably he didn't quite hit the same height, even then still an important part of Ruben Amorim's Sporting team. You know, heading into the delayed Euros last summer, he was fantastic. A linchpin in that Sporting team, pushed himself into the national side, adapted seamlessly, a really solid player, a defensive midfielder who is aggressive, can win the ball back, And has also really improved on his ball distribution, switching the play. It's something he does very often and very effectively for his former club. So I think he ticks a lot of boxes. I think he fits straight into Silva's system. I think adaptation, of course, will be the interesting thing, because it always is with any new recruit. But he's been playing in a 3-4-3 for two seasons, playing in a two in midfield. And you do wonder whether Silva may pivot towards having him alongside Reed. And you actually, the two different profiles of defensive midfielders there that seem to complement each other quite well. So, look, it's the kind of player you need. Fulham need to be solid in midfield. They won't have the same time on the ball that they had last year. They need someone who can break up the play, can help launch counterattacks. And Paulinho seems to be that. So to get him to pit Wolves to the mark, which they did, to get him for about £17 million, it's a hefty sum. It's going to be one of the bigger transfers this summer. But it looks like a good one. Obviously, time will tell if that turns out to be the case. But certainly bodes well.
Jack, you must be delighted to have another Portuguese in SW6.
Yeah, absolutely over the moon. I mean, look, mostly I'm absolutely over the moon because I think this is the profile that Fulham have been crying out for. And actually, you know, we have talked a lot about centre-backs and we do need a centre-back. No one's denying that, probably too. But you're looking at this and thinking, right, how do you get the best out of your centre-backs? How do teams protect their centre-backs? They put in a player who has the right profile in front of them in order to be able to give them that shield and that protection you need. And you only need to look at someone like Manchester United, right, to look at how centre-backs can be exposed and made to look far worse than they are by not having the shield, the requisite shield in front of them to be able to play the way that they want to play. Now, I think Paulinho gives Fulham this player. It gives a player who is happy to sit, who is going to be able to kind of patrol that midfield area and make sure that counterattacks aren't slicing through us like they did the last time we were in the Premier League, or at least the first time of late we returned to the Premier League, where Fulham were torn apart at times. I think, you know, you look at Parker's Fulham, and the reason that there was so little attacking flair partly was due to the fact that the personnel in the middle wasn't able to give you that base to build from. And therefore you can only leave a couple of players in the attacking third in order to try and make things happen. Now, obviously that frustrated people. It frustrated me. I'm not suggesting that's the only reason, but part of it is, okay, why do we think that they went five at the back? Why do we think that Fulham had so many players behind the ball all the time? Partly because Parker is a conservative manager, sure. But partly also because the profiles of bodies in the midfield weren't there to be able to produce that kind of stopper in the middle. And look, I think what's brilliant about Paulinho is not only is he aerially dominant, not only is he physically dominant, not only is he a ball-winning machine in the centre of the park. Obviously, the adaptation period is important here, and that's what he was for Sporting and what he would be for, you know, what he has been for the Portugal Seleção as well. But equally, when you're looking at this, you're looking at a player who provides all of those qualities. The qualities that someone like Kevin McDonald, right, provided for Fulham, but not in the Premier League, really. We're looking at, you know, a gap that Fulham have had for a long, long time here, where they didn't have a proper enforcer, a proper number six who was going to sit in front of the midfield. And I know some people like Harrison Reed in there, but I've said this from the kind of start, that don't see Harrison Reed as a lone six, especially not in the Premier League, where there is so much on physicality and aerial dominance in that area. You want him to be able to buzz around and destroy at will, be able to kind of leave his mark and push forwards in order to win the ball in important areas, because that's what Harrison Reed is best at. He is a destructive little dynamo in there, and he's able to get around and make those things happen. I think Paulinho will give him the base in order to bounce off that and be able to do the things he's best at. And this is what I mean about, you know, providing that shield for the defence. Yes, Fulham need to get centre-backs in, but giving them something in front of them that's going to protect whoever's in that zone anyway, I think is almost as important, maybe more important.
Yeah, I'm so excited by this transfer. It seems like a really, really smart move. And it's a good start, Peter, but it's a start that came a lot slower than pretty much anyone would have wanted by this point. I think all summer there's been two camps on Fulham Twitter anyway, where you've got one side who are saying, oh, it's fine, we just need to get players in a few weeks before, we don't need players in May and June. And I was firmly in that camp, and then it became quite apparent that Fulham were at least waiting until July to make any signings because of financial fair play. But when those players didn't literally arrive on the 1st of July, people were getting pretty mad. The Polina transfers come in. Solomon has been so protracted. And then you basically dropped an atomic bomb on Fulham Twitter over the weekend with your article stating that Silva is pretty unhappy with how things have panned out this summer. The advantage of getting promoted automatically seems to have evaporated. Tell me all about the process of this story coming to light, because as you say, it was a pretty explosive revelation when Silva came out. And one, as I mentioned at the top, we're all familiar with. We remember Slav's meltdowns famously pretty much every summer that the signings weren't going his way. So it seems like Silva has made the same play.
Yeah, I think you sort of divided it quite well there, Sammy, in terms of the two different camps. And I guess Silva's position is now pretty clear on how the window has gone in terms of these delays and in bringing players through the door. As we reported over the weekend, you know, he was unhappy about how slow it's been in getting players in through the door. He was unhappy about returning to Motspur Park to start pre-season with 10 outfield players. Of course, there were four other players as well who he's not included in the group because he wants them to be moved on. That's Josh Onimo, Anthony Knockaert, Avan Cavallero and Terence Kongolo. And it sort of voiced that frustration, really. You know, we've been talking about different targets. You know, Polina's one that had been discussed for a while, but it took a little time to get over the line. And Silva felt that he'd persuaded Polina to join the club 3 weeks before he eventually did. Obviously, there was the delay with agent fee commission as well, which didn't help. And then, of course, Manuel Solomon, which has pretty much been the saga of the summer, because that was talked about months and months ago. And you know, Fulham came close to an agreement for €7 million for him. That didn't happen. It was a move that was impacted by FIFA's regulations on Ukrainian-based foreign players and the same Russia, allowing them to register elsewhere. And that once they extended that ruling on June the 21st, it would mean that from June the 30th, if Shakhtar or any other Ukrainian club had not come to some kind of mutual agreement with their players, they could essentially leave for free for a season. And with Fulham's deal not finalised, that dragged on. Those negotiations were affected by that. And now my understanding is it looks like it's going to be a loan that Solomon should, all being well, we've seen how this transfer has gone, signed for Fulham. So in that context, especially considering, if you think back to the end of the season where, you know, there was a lot of emphasis on how important that time gap is that Fulham have. You know, we talked about it. Tony Khan talked about it in his interview with Daniel Taylor at The Athletic. Marco Silva spoke publicly about it as well. You know, this was more time than Fulham have had before upon promotion, and they wanted to take advantage of it. And there are loads of different elements to this, because, you know, it's not like Fulham have just been sitting there doing nothing, because that's just not the case. They have been looking for players. We've seen that. You can see that from the links and from what I've reported, and that actually getting them over the line has just not materialised, and that frustration for Silva is very clear. And you know, it's something that you don't want to fester. You don't want this kind of environment. It's not a good thing. You can't have your manager like this at pre-season's beginning. You know, the Premier League season hasn't started yet. But I think from a manager's perspective, he's looking at it going, right, I need my players in. You look at the first seven fixtures, it's four of the last year's top six. There's two West London derbies in there. It's a hard start. And last time Fulham in the Premier League, that terrible start really did have an impact. It essentially wrote off those first few games. Fulham missed out on survival. And despite good recruitment, and we praise that recruitment, it wasn't quite enough. And sure, there's the argument that Fulham should have stayed up, and they probably should have done in the end, considering how well they did. But, you know, Fulham and Silva wants to avoid that kind of start, and doing so requires trying to get business done early, getting that squad together, getting them prepared for Liverpool on the opening day of the season. And right now, that's not the case. You know, right now it's just Joao Palhinha who's come in. So until that materially changes, you're going to have an unhappy manager.
Jack, where's your sense of panic on the scale? It's still over 4 weeks till the start of the season. It's 4 weeks on Saturday until that first game against Liverpool. And in an ideal world, it would be perfect if Fulham had made four or five signings before pre-season started. They all met on the first day, and I don't know what they do on the first day at the training ground, sing Whitney Houston on a chair, all of those good things. But it's not happened that way. I don't feel like I'm in a sense of, oh, it's all going wrong, but also it has been slower than I'd hoped.
Yeah, I think I'm on the concerned edge of things, is how I would probably put it. I was willing to give it the benefit of the doubt until that first weekend in July for, you know, FFP reasons. I can understand that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I am now a bit like, okay, you know, and Peter makes the point there, right? He started with 10 outfielders in pre-season. Now obviously there are returning internationals, etc., which bumps that number up a little bit. You'd imagine that there's a couple of the academy boys who are going to be pushing in pre-season to, you know, to try and make their names. Jay Stansfield, Luke Harris, who, you know, will have seen what Fabio was able to do and be looking to try and prove their worth in pre-season to Marco Silva. But, you know, that number hasn't bumped up all that much, right? We're looking still at 15 maybe outfielders here that in preseason right now, which just isn't enough. Bearing in mind that this season substitutes go up, the benches get bigger. These are options that Fulham need to have. Now, it doesn't need to be all hands on deck before the season begins. Obviously, there will be business done in August. There always is. It's just how the world works. But you'd imagine that needs to be at least 20 outfielders before this season begins if Fulham are going to stand a fighting chance. And the quicker you get those through the door, the quicker the squad gels, the quicker everyone feels a bit more comfortable, the quicker that everything, you know, falls into place for Marco Silva, because he's got to work out how he's going to adapt a system from last year, which was completely ball dominant, to a system that isn't going to be that anymore. Now, I know obviously in that article that Peter wrote at the end of last year, he said that he doesn't want to change the style completely. He wants to, you know, keep the basic principles the same, that Fulham are going to attack in transition, that Fulham are going to try and have the ball as much as we can. But ultimately, we know that there are maybe 10 teams in the Premier League minimum who are going to outpossess Fulham in a standard game just by sheer quality of bodies on the pitch. And Marco Silva has to adapt his philosophy and strategy to that in order to make this work for Fulham. Now, the quicker he has the pieces in place to try and make that happen, the quicker that Fulham will look like a unit. And I think, you know, Peter made that point. The start last year killed us. Or the start last time killed us. And that's such an important period. And especially with a couple of winnable games in that period, you know, you're doubling down on, you know, obviously you're looking at the Liverpool game, first game of the season, you're thinking, okay, all right. You're looking at the Spurs game and thinking it's going to be very, very difficult to pick anything out of these games. But there are winnable games in these first six. And I think when you have that opportunity to waste it by waiting late in the window to get deals is a real concern. Now, it's easy to say this from a position of we're not trying to get these deals over the line. Deals are hard and transfers are difficult and there's loads and loads and loads of moving parts in them. But Fulham had the head start and it feels like that head start has potentially been a little bit wasted.
Jack, one player that Fulham have been linked with for ages before promotion was even confirmed is Manus Solomon. It's mad how long this has dragged out. We first talked about him back in April. It's now July and it's still not finalised. It's been the will he, won't he saga of the summer. Nice seems to keep chipping in, trying to sign him. If reports are led to be believed, every time that we think we've got him, just Nice seem to pop up. And I'm just like, go away, Nice. Just like, let us have this player, please. You're just winding us up at this stage. Anyway, Fulham and Shakhtar come close to concluding a €7 million agreement for Solomon last month. Obviously, there's this new FIFA ruling about Ukraine-based foreign players. And it seems now that it's going to be a loan. And a lot of fans are asking, I think rightly so, are Fulham doing the dirty here? Are Fulham being a little bit immoral, taking advantage of a situation that is outside of Shakhtar's control and using it for their own benefit? On the other hand, you could say, well, Fulham are legitimately using the rules. Why would they pay money now when they don't need to, when there is a way of making it work for them? It's not a simple question, but I wondered what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think all of it's very, very important, but it's obviously incredibly murky. I think is the other kind of point here to make. It's not clear cut, because so much of this is behind the scenes. So much of it is on FIFA's kind of, not political stance, but you know what I mean? And their stance of how this is going to work out. And that makes it incredibly hard to read. What I will say is that Benfica have completed a deal for David Neres, which was much cheaper than you'd imagine. I think it was about 12 million euros for him from Shakhtar. We've seen, you know, this Shakhtar side basically raided and rinsed for their players. And look, a lot of these players are people looking to either go to a World Cup or to progress their careers or to play, you know, regular football. Now, Shakhtar are going to be playing Champions League football next season, which is a bit weird. And I read a really, really good piece with Dario Cerna, who's the kind of director of football there, about what he wants to achieve and what he wants to show in the Champions League next year. And he basically said that we're going to put together a team of Ukrainian players and they're going to play for Shakhtar. And that's going to be the kind of point we're going down. So I think they've come to a point where they are, at the very least, not pleased about it, but at the very least, they've come to an acceptance of the situation that a lot of foreign players are going to leave straight away. We saw, you know, Tete go to Lyon in the back of last year on a loan deal temporarily. That seems to have been extended now for another year. So there's a lot going on here, right? There's a lot of different things happening at Shakhtar and a lot of players moving around. What I will say is that it gave me a distinct sense of unease, the way that the Fulham have gone about this. Now, obviously, it's easy for me to say this, it's not my money. And I'm not the one who has to spend it, and therefore I'm not the one investing. And it's easy to talk about other people's money and just be like, we'll just pay it. Like, why would you just pay it? When you're not actually benefiting or regressing from that investment. But the whole thing gives me a real distinct sense of uneasiness, and the fact that I just don't feel comfortable with how the saga has played out. Now, obviously, we don't know every detail, and therefore we don't know exactly what's gone on between player and club and between the two clubs and how it's all worked out for them. But the kind of noises coming out of Shakhtar's camp don't fill me with, you know, a great feeling. That's how I'd put it. I think we've probably been a little bit sneaky here, and I'd rather we weren't. It doesn't really fit my kind of ideal of what Fulham is. But again, it's not my money, so it's easy for me to say that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see exactly what happens and what the confirmed deal is, assuming that goes across the line soon, which fingers crossed it will once his medical and all of that happens. I feel like with Manus Solomon on Twitter, I've been seeing daily updates of his holiday. Every time I log on to Twitter, it's which hotel he's staying in and which flight he's on. I'm near Farnborough Airport, by the way, guys. So if anyone wants me to, you know,
drive
track
down
the planes in the sky. Yeah, I'm more than happy to take on that role for the Fulham fan base. Peter, the final signing that I want to come on to for now, Andreas Pereira. This one looks like it's getting across the line. You've reported a £10 million deal with Man United, and it seems like the player, well, at first it didn't look like he wanted to sign for Fulham. Now it appears that the deal is happening. I'd say that if you ask the fan base, everyone's very excited about João Palhinha. Everyone's very excited about Manus Solomon if it happens. I don't think the mood in the fan base is quite as strong on Pereira. I'll be honest that I don't know an awful lot about him. There is a bit of kind of Man United baggage that comes with this. It's also always a bit of skepticism, I think, when a player who hasn't made it a top club goes down a level because they haven't made it there. So there's always that kind of skepticism, but yeah, I guess it's maybe the downgrade of Carvalho to Pereira. I'm not that excited by it. I'll agree with a lot of people here.
Yeah, I think the mood music doesn't help. As you mentioned, you know, he's been at a top club whose supporters will be pleased to see him go. And I think we've seen that from sort of the social media reaction. And then you've got the fact that he's been at Flamengo, where he's been really happy, you know, and he's talked about that. And, you know, I think in different circumstances, he'd probably want to stay there. I think he sort of made that pretty clear. So naturally that triggers some concerns. It triggers some concerns because obviously last time for him in the Premier League, Fulham loaned Ruben Loftus-Cheek and it didn't exactly go amazingly well.
That's the understatement of the century.
Yeah, there's a real... Nice one. Good to see you picking up on that sarcasm, Jack. Look, there are different factors here. And I think what should be more encouraging is the fact that United have kept him on their books for so long. He's clearly a talented player, not really been able to show that consistently in English football. What bodes well for him is that he's joining a club which has a growing Portuguese-speaking contingent. It's going to be a good environment for him to thrive. We know Silva's style of play is attacking. We know that he likes a creative midfielder who can play in that 8/10 position. I think he's got points to prove. I think we're probably looking at Carvalho. You know, he scored goals, and I don't think Pereira has shown that he can do that to that extent, and it'll be difficult in the Premier League. But there are elements to it that should be encouraging. And the fee from what we reported on Tuesday, 8 million up front, 2 million add-ons, is a good fee. It's not a bank breaker, if you see what I mean. Again, as Jack was saying earlier, it's not my money, so I'm sure there'd be different.
It would be a bank breaker for you.
It would be more than that, I think. life breaker. but listen, I feel like there's a reason Marco Silva has gone after him and wants this signing. And you know, I don't know how quickly this will be confirmed and whether he. You know, we've reported there's been an accepted offer. Whether this does fully go through, it looks like this will be the case. But you know, there are positives to take, I think, from him. But compared to the others, I think there are probably more question marks. And in that context of it, of how people are feeling about it at the different clubs he's been at, you know, that doesn't bode well. But a fresh start could be the making of him.
Jack, your thoughts on Pereira?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, he's kind of struggled almost wherever he's gone. He did all right at Granada when he was there. He had a relatively decent spell there. He struggled at Valencia, struggled at Lazio. Seems to have had a really good time at Flamengo. And I do wonder if part of the reason he's loved it so much there is not only, obviously, it's not his homeland. He was born in Belgium, but it's that land that he represents. It's the, you know, the country of his family. He was, you know, son of another professional footballer, if I'm not mistaken, a Brazilian professional footballer. And he was born in Belgium because his dad was playing in Belgium at the time.
Gotcha.
And sort of, he's had lots of different kind of, his career's kind of gone in lots of different directions. He's played in Holland, he's played in Spain, he's played in Italy, he's played in Brazil, and he's played in England. And so, you know, that's a lot for someone who's, you know, 26. He's done a lot of moving about and never really found, I think, at home. And part of me wonders if the reason he loved Flamengo so much is because he did well there and he was loved there. And it was the first place he was given that kind of, okay, show us what you can do and have a long run in the team and play. And he kind of grew into himself a little bit. And so therefore, you know, not only going back to, you know, the land of your fathers, but also the idea of playing somewhere that you are kind of cradled and cherished is massive for a player who's bounced around for his basic whole career, right? So that's what I'm kind of looking at here. And I wonder if he gets to Fulham and he is loved and given that opportunity, that he'd shine and love it here as well. And yes, there's massive questions, as Peter says, but it does feel like a gamble on a player who needs to make a point. And that feels better to me than a gamble on a player who has nothing to prove.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's a touch of the Harry Wilsons in this. A player who moved around on loan. I think in his heart of hearts, dreamed of playing for the big club that he was signed for. And as the years progressed, quietly realised probably that he was never going to make it there. I mean, Man United's been a basket case of a club to be at in for the last kind of however many years ever been Sir Alex left, really. So if it does happen, not my first choice of player, but also I'm hoping that could come in there, prove himself. It's a permanent deal. I would be very, very wary of a loan in this circumstance, but on a permanent deal, you just never know the mindset of a player. So fingers crossed. Jack, just before we take a break, I just wondered if there was any other transfer gossip activity that you thought was pertinent to bring up. The Romagnoli one is the one for me that seems like he's playing Fulham to get another move. I thought you might want to expand on him and potentially a couple other deals that seem to be more in the gossip chamber for the moment.
Yeah, it feels like a really weird one. Obviously, he was out of contract at Milan this summer. You know, it's easy to forget he was Milan club captain. He's 27 years old. He feels a lot older than that because he feels like he's been coming through forever, right? It's one of those. If I'm not mistaken, he grew up a Lazio fan playing for Roma, which is a bit nuts. But now there's this kind of link back to Lazio. And, you know, I think in his heart of hearts, he would probably prefer to play to Lazio, the club he grew up supporting in, you know, the nation he's never left. He's played for Roma and Sampdoria and Milan and would probably quite like to stay in Serie A. But Fulham have basically doubled the offer that Lazio have. And that's kind of where he's at. So it's a little bit uncomfortable in the idea of, does he want to be here? And I think it's a bit different to the Pereira one, because with Pereira, I think his "I don't want to be here" is that I want to be in somewhere that I'm loved, and I want to be at Flamengo because I know that's there. Now that's not financially possible, financially viable. So there is slightly different elements to this. This feels like Fulham are just like, please come. And she's like, I tell you what, we'll double your wage offer. That's where we're at. And you know what? It's a really hard one. It's a really difficult one because Romagnoli, when he came through at Roma, was absolutely unbelievable. You know, he went out to Samp, was excellent. And then suddenly Milan were like, right, we'll have him. Brilliant. 25 million euros, I think it was at the time, with a sell-on clause. And he did really well for a little while. And then he got injured. He's got nearly 200 caps, you know, for Milan. He's made a lot of appearances. He's been there for 7 odd years, but you know, that's a lot of games. And he was a brilliant, brilliant defender. You know, this is a man with 12 Italy caps. But he has struggled recently with injuries. And while he's a brilliant ball player, I'm a bit concerned about how it fits, because he, since coming back from injury, he's been usurped. He was Milan's fourth choice centre-back by the end last year. Kalulu came in from right back and became a centre-back. Tomori came through, obviously. There was Kjær. And it felt like they were kind of turning to anyone as opposed to the club captain, which is not a great position to be in. And that's because when he came back from his injury, you know, the things that were brilliant about him, he was an unbelievable one-on-one defender. He was an absolute, you know, beast one-on-one. Just didn't let players past him. And I remember, I think it was against Sassuolo, Guaguada Frel was running at him and he just looked so scared. It was rabbit in the headlight stuff. And I'm like, hang on, you're Milan's club captain. You can't look like this. And he absolutely scythed him down one-on-one, last man, got sent off. And it was like, it's really uncomfortable to watch a player in that kind of decline. Now he's had loads of injuries, knee injuries. I think he's got a replacement hip. You know, this is a player who once was, you know, a very sprightly, mobile centre back. And now when he turns, it's a bit like a truck turning. And that worries me. Now, he is still a very, very good ball player, right? He's still an excellent passer of the ball. And there is a distinct possibility that with a run of games and a run of fitness, Romagnoli could get back to being a player who is, you know, raising Fulham's roof. At full fitness, at full strength, Romagnoli would be the best defender at the club by some distance. But we haven't seen that player for sort of 3 years. And that concerns me deeply. And for what we're looking at paying him and the contract we're looking at offering him, I'm concerned about it. Like, I'm concerned about his mobility. I'm concerned about his defensive nous these days. And there's real errors crept into his game. And I'm just concerned that if that happens in the Premier League, the fans will turn on him really quickly, because he was meant to be the marquee signing at the back and suddenly he's falling over himself and letting players through and taking out players one-on-one, last man, and getting sent off. I don't know how patient people will be with that. And I think that's fair enough. But it's, you know, one of those where he needs to be given a long recovery period in order to get himself back to the standard he's available. And I don't know if we have that period. I don't know if we have that runway.
I mean, it doesn't sound like it's likely to happen anyway if he wants to go to Lazio, even though the financials are good. It's not one that I've ever really seriously thought was going to happen. Peter, just before we finish, where are we on the rumour spreadsheet? You were in the 60s, 70s back in May, or have you given it up because it's impossible to keep track of all the rumours?
Well, because I was away for a couple of weeks, I feel like I missed a load. So I haven't, and then when I've come back, it's been like been in a washing machine with all the news that's happening. So I'm still late 60s, I think. To be fair, there's been a few added on. So I think I've only recently come into the 60s, but there's actually probably more. And I probably need to, when I get a moment, actually just go back and check that I haven't missed.
Back to Camram's rumor mill.
Exactly. But yeah, it's more than 70, but I haven't updated the list. So,
Okay. Well, I can't wait for that article to come out when Peter does the full breakdown of every rumor from the entire summer. That's going to be a nice long read on The Athletic that I'll enjoy on my holiday in September once the transfer windows open. Right. We'll take a break there afterwards. We're going to have a look at Fulham's start of the season. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy James here with Peter Rutzler and Jack Collins. Just to say that this podcast is backed by you guys over on the Fulhamish community. Thank you to all of you who support us over there. Keep our articles, podcasts, videos going. As a bonus, we give you access to the Fulhamish Telegram, which has been really, really fun this summer. It's come into its own, particularly with transfer season. We have three different chats on there. We kind of got a general Fulham chat, a transfers chat, a pubs and away days chat, which, as you can imagine, the pubs and away days chat has died away a little bit in the summer as there've been no matches, but the transfers chat has been something else. I'm legitimately getting most of my latest news from the Telegram because a lot of the people in there are super switched on. So it's a way of supporting Fulhamish. As a bonus, you get access to the Telegram. All details on the Fulhamish website. If you go to the Fulhamish website, click the little support Fulhamish button at the top if you are interested in joining and can afford to do so. But of course, this podcast and everything else that we do remains completely free and open if you don't want to or can't afford to support us. It's completely up to you. Right, let's have a look then at Fulham's start of the season. The fixtures came out. Always that little bit of extra excitement, Peter, when you change division. Certainly when you go up division, there's a little less excitement when you go down a division, as we well know. And we mentioned it earlier, Fulham start the season at home to Liverpool on the 6th of August. That's 12:30 kickoff, away to Wolves, home to Brentford. So our second match at Craven Cottage is a West London derby. We've got Arsenal at the Emirates and Brighton at home before August is out. Of course, it's a strange season given the fact that the World Cup divides it and in November the season stops. It doesn't come back until Boxing Day. It's a tough start for Fulham, but then again, I'm not sure. It's a bit of the Premier League's there's always tough fixtures in there.
You play everyone twice.
You do play everyone twice. There's only so much you can analyse it. But given how badly Fulham have started in the past couple of Premier League seasons, I'm hopeful that Fulham can get a win earlier on the board than we have the previous two times, particularly the first time in the Premier League. You know, we got that one Burnley win and that was it for pretty much the first 3 months of the season. So Fulham need to get underway. Potentially that Brentford match could be pretty crucial three games in.
Yeah, I suppose you can always overanalyze this a little bit, but I think you're right just because of the fact that Fulham starts during the last two Premier League stays were not good. You want to get something on the board, because once you know last time in the Premier League it looked like Fulham were cut adrift and never really were able to recover. You're always chasing and it maybe takes the heat off a little bit. You don't want to apply that heat too early because there's going to be a lot of pressure this season. You would expect unless Fulham do extraordinarily well, but you look at that opening month. Wolves, Brentford, Brighton, there's opportunities for points there, as Jack was saying earlier, because once you hit September, that the outlook becomes a little bit more difficult with Tottenham and Chelsea in swift succession. So taking some points in those games would just change the mood a little bit. I mean, obviously, there's still the transfer window there. You don't want it to get to the end of August again and feel like, God, Fulham are not equipped here and suddenly it's deadline day madness again. As I said, you don't want to overanalyze it too much in terms of the games, but considering the fact that there's Wolves and Brentford in the middle of August, you want the team to be in a strong position by that point and are able to take something from those games. But you know, this is the Premier League, you know, and the Premier League consistently seems to get tougher. That gap between the Championship and the Premier League seems to get wider, because once you have so much money, you know, 100 million at least in television broadcast rights going through your accounts every year, that's going to strengthen the collective across the league from 17th to first. So, you know, for all three of the promoted sides, it's going to be a challenge, but it's taking those points when you can get them. And, you know, Wolves are a little bit uneasy. Obviously, Fulham signed Palhinha, and I think there was an expectation that he may go there. And Brentford have obviously lost Christian Eriksen, which is a huge blow. It'll be really difficult to replace him because he had such an impact, didn't he? Brentford was really struggling before he came in and transformed their season pretty much. So, you know, as it stands, there's opportunities there. But, you know, you can always twist around, as I did earlier in the podcast, and point out that it's four of last year's top six in the first seven and two West London derbies. So let's see.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Obviously, you do play everyone twice, so I wasn't joking about that. But it's a phrase that I was using in jest. And look, the order they come in does matter. And like, you know, you only have to look at Brentford last season, and obviously I hate saying this, but it's true. You look at the fact that they started like a train, and that probably kept them up. Like, to be perfectly honest with you, that and a wee like rally at the end of the season with Christian Eriksen probably kept them in the division, because you don't win those first, you know, three games that they won, and suddenly they were, you know, flying. They were fourth at one point. Everyone was like, oh my God, they're going to get Champions League. But, you know, it did feel like one of those games where you looked at it and think, okay, they got Arsenal a really good time to begin with. They won that first game and everyone gets a massive boost, and suddenly the vibes are up and everyone's, you know, together and moving forward. And that's what you want, right? You want everybody to be in the same place and the same direction moving forward. You lose your first six, everyone starts bickering. That's how it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just how football works. You go on a losing streak, everyone gets upset. The manager starts trying to change things. He starts trying to work through different solutions, and suddenly you're kind of working on the fly to try and make things happen. And that's exactly what happened to Fulham last time. You know, you win a couple of those first six and you're thinking, okay, all right, we might have lost to Liverpool. Sure, you know, that's okay. We might have lost to Arsenal. You get points out of Brentford and Brighton and Wolves, as Peter said. You know, you're kind of like, okay, we're getting into September. You got 5-7 points on the board. You're like, okay, we could do this. You know, there will be teams who start worse than that. Absolutely no doubt there will be a couple of teams at the bottom of the table at the start of September who have 0-1-2 points. You could pick up 5 or 7. You're in a position where you're thinking, okay, can we start to move forwards and push things onwards and get ourselves into... I don't think anyone thinks that Fulham are going to survive in relative comfort next season. I think that would be nonsense. But I do think if you can get yourself into a position where teams are chasing you and teams are panicking and changing managers and you know, working around solutions that they didn't have at the start of the season, that's a good place to be in. You want to be being chased. And ultimately, unless you're, you know, whoever's playing England cricket, but that is literally the kind of point you're making. You want people to be looking up and going, hang on. You want your teams like Everton last year to be looking up and going, Fulham have been promoted. How are they there when we're down here? We need to change everything immediately. We need to mix things up. We need to try and find something. You want people, you know, panicking and scrambling underneath you. And I think a decent start is really important to that.
And there's a really important period in the fixtures, I think, end of September to the end of October. 7 games, none of them against the traditional top six, West Ham in there. And we obviously have had a couple of brilliant seasons, but there's a little run, particularly Bournemouth, Villa, Leeds, Everton. Looks absolutely crucial. But you know, who knows? Villa might be a top 6-7 side this year. Everton might have a resurgence. They've, you know, signed James Tarkowski. Maybe that'll fix some of their problems. It's impossible to know exactly who's going to be at the bottom, apart from maybe you can probably assume that 2 or 3 out of the promoted sides are going to be there. Other than that, and we talked about at the end of last season, Jack, impossible to know really from the rest of the Premier League who's going to thrive and who's going to dive really in the coming season, because so much changes with all the transfers going on. Each club really seems to be doing a bit of a refit of their squad to some extent. Right, we're going to take another break there. After that, we've got a couple of questions and one very, very good. This will catch on. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It is Sammy here with Jack and Peter. Let's do a couple of questions first. There's been a couple coming through. First of all, let's go to David Smith. He says, hi team, for the next pod, I was wondering if you'd be able to shed some light on the thinking behind renewing Steven Sessegnon's contract only to loan him out to Charlton. If the third tier is his level at 22, it's hard to see the benefit of keeping him. And that's thanks from David. Also a similar point on someone like Sonny Hilton, Jack, who has gone on loan to Carlisle. I felt like he was a really hot prospect, but to be going to League Two at 23, which I think he is, seems like maybe a death knell in his future at Fulham. Is it a case of Fulham just holding on, maybe just in case he absolutely is a late bloomer and flies for not an awful lot of money? But it does seem like, well, Steven Sessegnon, I wasn't even 100% sure if he was a Championship right back, let alone a Premier League one.
Yeah, obviously there's elements of the club want to let their, you know, players flourish as much as possible. And I often say this about other academies, namely Chelsea's at Cobham, that, you know, the strength of academy is not always based on how many players come through into the first team. It's how many players you can sell on for a profit, even if that's lower down the order, right? And if you're selling players to Championship clubs, to League One clubs, to League Two clubs, you're making, you know, some sort of profit on some of them, and that feeds back into helping strengthen the academy pipeline because you can then reinvest it. And so I think it's important to know that, you know, not all successes mean a player has to break through at Fulham. You know, success might be selling a Steven Sessegnon or whoever to a Championship club next season who maybe got promoted Championship club for, you know, a couple of million. That's ideal. You know, that's actually, you know, a player who's come through and made the club money, and that's a good thing. Not every success is measured in whether they break into our first team or not. And so I would imagine that Sonny Hilton's one. I was a bit surprised with it as well. But I do wonder if that's to try and get him at a dominant side rather than a side scrapping at the bottom of the table. Is it better to have him in a dominant League Two side than a League One side who don't have much of the ball, considering the type of player that Sonny Hilton is? Now, I kind of thought he'd go top of League One, to be perfectly honest with you. But that appears to be the offer that's come in. There seems to be, you know, everyone seems to be pretty happy with it. And there was a lot of high talk on Fulham's website, etc., about that deal and why people are excited about it. So I think that's a good thing. Steven Sessegnon might be a little bit different. You know, he's in a Charlton side there where he's going to, you know, have to play a slightly different role. And I wonder if that's as much about finding out exactly where he plays, because I don't think we've ever really come to the bottom of that conclusion. Is he a right centre back? Is he a right back? Is he a right wing back? We don't really know, because we saw him kind of utilised in a lot of different roles. So I wonder if that's just a question of going out and getting him minutes at a place where he will be able to, you know, be part of a team that he feels comfortable in. Obviously, Charlton is not far away from where kind of he grew up, and that there will be a kind of family base there still that he can rely on, and one that Fulham can keep an eye on very closely. So that's a good thing, I think. And I think it's just about getting these players and being able to let them show their worth, you know, and part of this is finding teams who will give them the opportunity to get those minutes, right? It's not necessarily firing off to the best possible club they could get to. It's about finding a team who, you know, would have spoken to Fulham about it and bought into the concept of being like, we want to, you know, help shape this team around the player you're giving us on loan, and therefore making, you know, giving them the best possible opportunity to shine. And that, I think, is important. So I think it's just worth considering those things when we look at where these players are going.
Okay. Next question from John Witham. He says, hi guys, hopefully you're having a wonderful break now using your 2022 Champions cheese board as a serving platter for Aperol spritzes and Pimm's Cup. Yes, the Champions cheese board is astonishing. Did you manage to blag one of those for yourself, Peter? A Champions cheese board?
I haven't. As of
When's
yet.
Your birthday? What month's your birthday in?
September, so not too long. So.
Okay, there we go, Jack. They will club together and we'll get you a Champions cheese board. We will genuinely make that happen. Right, I'm reading all of these transfer rumours and getting a little bit nervous. Some of the price tags on these players are giving me shades of 2018. However, the world is a much different place now than 4 years ago. How much have player prices inflated since our Seri and Gisa spending spree in that year? Is £17 million reported for Minamino not as high as it sounds? Now, obviously, the Minamino not happening, but he did send this email a couple of weeks ago, so we'll forgive him. But yeah, interested to get your thoughts, Peter, on the kind of average price of players. You know, £10 million for Andreas Pereira would have been a huge fee 10 years ago. Nowadays, £10 million feels a bit like what £2 or £3 million used to feel like a decade or so ago.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm aware of giving too superficial an answer without delving into the numbers a little bit. But I think if you talk about it in basic terms, yeah, I think prices have gone up significantly. And there has been a football inflation in the past decade. And you can pinpoint some key moments as to why that's happened, not least Neymar's transfer to
James
to PSG.
Tompkins joining Crystal Palace for £10 million.
I knew he was going to say that. So predictable.
But yeah, and of course, there's also inflation overall within the economy, and that translates into football as well. So those are key factors. I think what's been interesting is that the pandemic has probably deflated a little bit of that value, the silly heights that it was going to or threatened to reach, especially now when you have a lot of clubs in Europe who do not have the same amount of cash available to them. You kind of have an environment now where the Premier League clubs are almost Super League-esque, I suppose, but because their financial firepower is it completely outguns a lot of Europe's top leagues. There's a reason why Fulham have an interest in Alessio Romagnoli, as crazy as it may have seemed. You know, he's a Serie A title winner, but even Fulham are in a position to offer him a good contract that could outcompete a European chasing team. So that's one of the more interesting elements to it. I don't think the massive fees that the Neymar sort of transfer inspired and led to will get back to that point anytime soon, because one, clubs can't afford it, but also I feel like there's also been a sort of deflation. But to be honest, I think it's a little unsettled to actually know where the cards are going to lie because of all those factors. But as I say, without probably going into the numbers, then it's difficult to note. But you get these sort of transfers that act as barometers for the rest of the footballing world, and it's a small world because all these transfers can be linked. So, that's my answer. Basically, there is an inflation and. And that's tied to not just the economy, but also transfers within the game.
Yeah. Well, before we finish, I've got two emails here. One is a This Will Catch On, one is just a regular email that we got like almost the same day that we recorded our final podcast. So they just didn't make the edit, but realistically, I'd have loved to have included both of them in the final podcast of last year. The first is kind of a letter from Pau Garcia Fuster. I know you've seen this one, Jack. This was such a lovely letter, and I'm going to read, I'm going to summarize his letter a little bit. He says, "Hello, dear Fulhamish friends. What I like is that he starts off it by saying, I'm writing this email as an exercise for my English lesson and also as an honest grateful to all of you. So I like that we're just part of your English learning here, Pau." He says, "Despite being a Fulham fan from Catalonia from many years ago, this season has been the first one listening to the pod and I haven't missed one episode. The last one, the Fulhamish Annual, was a brilliant summary of an exceptional season. It's been a perfect way of me learning English, but also learning some Fulham history too, with Sammy, Jack, Peter and all the rest. Thank you for bringing it to us every week for all I need to know about Fulham FC. I know that my story probably doesn't matter to anyone, but as I mentioned before, I want to tell you how a Catalan boy became a Fulham fan. He says, 15 years ago, I used to watch every Monday evening a Spanish TV show about international football called Fiera de Fútbol. I don't know if I've pronounced that right, Jack. I've done my best, but it's translated as Football Fever. This show had a regular Uruguayan commentator, Carlos Castellanos, who spoke every Monday about the Fulham result that weekend. One day he explained why he was a huge Fulham fan and talked about his father who moved to London in the 70s. Before his family could join him, he looked for the right English club to support and bring his kids to the stadium. That club was Fulham FC due to its atmosphere and familiar environments. Castellanos was a regular season ticket holder with his father many years at Craven Cottage. For instance, he always spoke about the impression that George Best made to him. His story caught my eye, and since then I was interested about Fulham FC and its results, particularly the Europa League final against Atletico Madrid. He used to be a football referee. He refereed in the third division of Spain for more than 70 games. And once he finished, he wanted a club to be more emotionally involved in, so he adopted Fulham FC. He said, finally, in August 2018, meaning he went to London on holiday, and despite my wife hating football, I convinced her to attend a football match in order to live the experience. We bought two tickets for Fulham versus Burnley. We saw the amazing goal of Seri, Mitro being on fire, and even Andre Schürrle scored that day. I know, what a match to choose. It was so impressive, we came back two more times. At Craven Cottage, we've seen a defeat against Man City and a fantastic win against Bielsa's Leeds United in December 2019. Since then, COVID brought some distance between London and us, but the emotional relation has been more and more intense. I'm a regular Fulham membership, I support the Fulham Supporters Trust, and I'm a subscriber to The Athletic just to read Peter Rutzler's pieces. The fact is, we now have two boys, one-year-old twins, with their Fulham mini kits, probably the only kids with a Fulham shirt in Teresa, the city near to Barcelona where we live, and my dream is to bring them to the cottage as soon as they will remember something. As I don't want to have to wait 4 or 5 years to come back, maybe I'll try and bring some mates in the meantime. Who knows, maybe we can join some of you in a Putney pub and have some pints before and after a Fulham victory in the top flight. As I said before, thanks for making me feel so close to Fulham, and apologies for my long story. Come on, you whites.
It's so nice. It made me so happy.
Such a nice.
I remember sending you, like, we got this email at the same time, and I remember being like, Sam, I'm quite upset. I'm like genuinely quite emotional. It's so lovely. Pal, is what a story. Thank you. It's just such lovely words.
Yeah, lovely. We don't always read the fully long letters that we get. And your English is very, very good, pal. You should be very pleased. I'm very impressed with that. Finally, this'll catch on. Again, this came in on the day of the final pod, and I just didn't have enough time to turn it around. It's from Jake Shillingford. He says, hi guys, my name is Jake Shillingford. I'm a professional songwriter and I run a songwriting business. I had a bunch of hits in the 90s with my band called My Life Story, and I'm a staunch FFC fan along with my father and my grandfather before him. I have written a song to celebrate our record-breaking championship winning season. The band is called The Tarquins.
I love that at Brentford.
And this is a legit song. So I'm going to play you a minute of it now, and then we'll play the full thing after the podcast has ended. And I'm interested to get your opinions on this.
Good.
So there's a print. You'll get the full thing at the end. It's available for download. We'll put a link in the podcast. Jack, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's great. It's very 90s, isn't it? I really like it. It made me laugh. It made me smile. So, and I really enjoy the use of Gentleman Jim through the middle of it. So, yeah, excellent vibes all around as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's quite football's coming home, isn't it, Peter, with the commentary and the rock song?
Yeah, Gentleman Jim makes it for me. It feels more authentic once you get Jim's dulcet tones coming through off a rock background. But yeah, it's quite enjoyable. It's quite nice. Very professional, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very well done. Very well done.
Yeah, so we'll put a link to that in the podcast description. We'll also play it at the end. It's available on a digital download, and you can support Jake and the good work that he's doing. We'll also put a link to their Facebook page. So I don't know if there's going to be... I mean, he's called the band The Tarquins. He can't just be a one-hit wonder. So is this the start of a...
Then we're going to get another Fulham album.
Yeah, I want like a full Fulham album. Yeah. I want a song for every different player, and the artwork to be just every player on a pitch with a different song, please. So maybe that can be the job of the Tarquins, and we're more than happy to be your your radio station of choice, where we will play all of your latest singles. Jake, thank you very much. And yeah, full recording at the end of the podcast. And that is all for today. It's been absolutely wonderful to be back. We've got a bit of a new thing that we'd like to do on some of the podcasts coming up. So you'll know that the way that we name some of the podcasts generally around the three word reviews after matches. We get you guys to give a three word review. Jack or whoever reads some of the best ones and then selects the favorite one to be the name of the podcast. But on the Thursday Club, we've never known exactly what to name them because we don't have three word reviews to react to. Generally, they're pretty specific.
We will this season. There's a midweek fixture every second week.
No, there's barely any midweek fixtures. So we're going to have, but I love the three word pod titles. I just think it's really clean. But it's always better when it's user generated and it's not us coming up with it, just because basically we get the brain power of more people. So what we're doing is, if you're part of the Fulhamish community, I'm going to ask them for every Thursday Club and midweek pod where there's not an obvious three word review to link it to, for some pod names. And if you're part of the community, you can get involved in this. So I did that yesterday in the Fulhamish chat in there. We had a few different suggestions. Lou said TK's Transfer Crisis was one of the names. Jacob was announced new podcast, but I think the best one that we can go with for today, and it got the most thumbs up by far in the group, Dara Curran, Silver Signings Playbook, as the podcast title today. So really want to keep this going on a regular basis, and thank you to those in the community that got involved with the name. And that is all for the podcast. As I said, we'll be at least once a week until the start of the season. Might even do a couple of doubles where pre-season matches permit it. But until next time, have a lovely week. Peter Rutzer, thank you very much.
No, thank you for having me, Sammy. As always, pleasure to be here.
And Jack Collins, thank you.
No, thank you, Sammy. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it is indeed. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we will see you on the next one. Come on, you whites.
You whites.
Champion, champion.